Blog Talk Radio. The Republican mandate is to do everything that they can, including destroy the country, to prevent Obama from having a second term as president. If a group of powerful people emphatically and publicly state that they will do everything in their power to destroy President Obama, why would anyone believe a word they say now, or anything Obama said in the debate, or anything Romney, rather, said in the debate last night? Romney is a liar, the leader of a party that vowed to destroy Obama. If Obama had vowed to destroy the Republican Party, I might understand their anger at him. But he didn't, and hasn't, and has tried to work with them on many major issues. Instead of compromising or even developing a viable solution to the problems facing the country, they insist on continuing the bankrupt policies that caused all the problems, then condemn Obama for trying to fix them, which is what he was elected to do by over 60% of the American voters. Obama gave Romney a clear field against him without putting up any solid defense or comeback. He could have simply stated that Romney wanted General Motors to fail, as well as the U.S. banking system. That is all he would have had to say, and Romney would have been knocked out cold. Instead, Obama seemed indifferent to Romney's attacks and casually let him continue to attack him. This is the folly of Obama. His entire time in office, he has been this way. He prefers to sit with the women of The View rather than sit with the Republican leadership. He would rather have a beer with a disgruntled old friend who got arrested entering his own house rather than have a beer with Boehner and Cantor and tackle the major issues of our country heading for default. He would rather smile at the camera and sing a song and entertain his audience rather than inform them of the dire straits this country is in and who their enemies really are. It appeared to me while watching the debate that Obama may not want a second term and may enjoy watching Romney and the Republicans sink into the annals of history as the party and president that destroyed the United States. As sitting president, he knows well the problems facing this country and has thousands of secrets that cannot be revealed due to national security, or divulging, as Kennedy did, those who really run the world and the U.S. Perhaps that knowledge and the irony of it all was what Obama was thinking about last night as he allowed Romney to attack him. Romney forgot that Obama has the power to arrest him and his Republican opponents on the grounds that they may have threatened the president. He could have had Romney arrested as a terrorist or a revolutionary. The power of the president is far greater than anyone other than the president can understand or appreciate. Mitt Romney may understand some of the power of the president having been a governor, but I doubt he truly understands what a fool he really is. I also believe Obama knows he will have another 4 years. He has been told that by the powerful people who put him there in 2008. The debate was little more than a 90-minute verbal wrestling match where both wrestlers took a dive. It was a great for television ratings and a distraction for what was really happening in this country. And being able to blame it all on one of the other candidates, the reigning champ, Obama, really didn't have to debate Romney for 90 minutes. He could have literally knocked him out within a single blow. But the great democracy must have its heroes and villains, and losers and winners, in order to keep the American people happily divided and excited for the coming election. And that's the way I saw it. I don't know, according to 10 million Twitters, I guess that's the way they saw it too. Which I was kind of surprised at. But I'm just trying to go into my site here and pull up the I have a tremendous number of conservative articles written regarding conservatives. One was my reflection of my interview with John McManus, president of the John Birch Society, which I did back in 06. That was my first interview with him. And then I had, in February of 05, was when I first got the, I wrote a thought about conservatives. And I'd like to read that now. It was inspired by Emerson's essay, The Conduct of Life. Let me read my essay. I wrote this back in February of 2005, and it's on my website. It's called "The Thought About Conservatives." And I was listening to Rush Limbaugh this afternoon, and on my way home, he was gloating, and he was so proud of himself, proud of Romney, and so on and so forth. But he said, "Liberals don't have a clue or an idea of what conservatives are." They don't understand the conservative mentality, so on and so forth. And they don't want to. To them, it's horrendous. It's a horrendous thing. Now, I'm quoting Rush Limbaugh here, when I say that. And it's not that it's so much a horrendous thing. We don't understand you. We don't understand this conservative, ultra-conservative mentality. And the funny part about it is, Romney isn't really a conservative either. Romney is a moderate or to a liberal. However, and that's one of the problems that the Republican Party has with Romney. He's not reaching his base. But let me go on. In this essay that I wrote back in February of 2005, called "Thought About Conservatives." In Emerson's great series of essays, Conduct of Life, his essay on fate states this about conservatives. All conservatives are such from personal defects. They have been effeminated by position or nature, born halt and blind, through luxury of their parents, and can only, like invalids, act on the defensive. And I thought that was such a profound statement. That I quoted, of course, this essay, and it's so true. It's so true. They act on a defensive mode. Everything about them is defensive. Everything is holding back. Praising the past, keeping the past. Let me go on. On the grand design of nature and the divine order, Emerson is one of America's greatest thinkers and most respected writers. His relevance and concepts are absolutely timeless. One can only imagine what he would have to say about the conservative pundits and think tanks of today, and if he were alive and writing today, what the conservative media would say about him. I'm certain the majority of the media have never read Emerson, just as they have read none of the writings of the great liberal thinkers of our American heritage, Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and so many others. Ignorance is bliss. That is the motto of most conservatives. They think that their parents thought, or do not think at all, or they think what they are told to think by their government or priest or preacher or teacher without inquiry or investigation as to the origin of fact or fiction. They dread the pain of industry it takes to think for themselves. They prefer to parrot the cliches and actions of the damned generation, calling them great and noble. These generations of slavery, segregation, monopolies, world wars, massive poverty, and imperial tyranny, rather than listen, read, and cherish the wisdom of the true sages who combated the blindness, stupidity, and selfishness of dynasties and conservative governments and societies to bring about social reforms into free, liberal governments. The great horror facing America is the possibility of Emerson's works and the works of other great liberal thinkers becoming banned from schools and purged from the history of the American people. Conservative ignorance got Charles Darwin expelled from grade school science. Thomas Jefferson be purged from American history classes? Ralph Waldo Emerson already has been expelled. Even the brilliant revolutionary works of Christ have been perverted and edited into the ignorant rantings of evangelical cult leaders of the Christian right, who call their followers to a false heaven through the malevolent manipulation of fear and faith. Christ's teachings are with us because of courage, far-thinking, open-minded people who preserved his works and recorded his teachings throughout the Roman persecutions of the early Christians and through the dark ages of the barbarians who burned and plundered all civilizations and made slaves of the conquered people. The extreme conservatism we now face in America is the same barbarism, the same brutal force and ignorance that burns books, humiliates liberal ideals, and destroys all dignity and the advancements of mankind by viewing the world as its enemy. Rather than open their closed minds to ideas of peace, compassion, and the goal of human and planetary perfection worthy of eternal reward, rather than eternal damnation. And, you know, my thoughts on this are so, they haven't wavered, and it's been 7 years since I wrote that. But they haven't wavered in my estimation of conservatives. And it's not that I dislike them, so I'm so repelled by their way of thinking, you know. I don't know what else to say. It's kind of like they just don't seem to get it. Maybe they do. There's another article I wrote back in 05, I believe it was. Yeah, January of 05. And at that time I was doing a show on W222. We did that right up until the last year. Unfortunately the station was canceled. Not canceled, the station was sold. Our show was canceled along with all the other programming that was done and went into an NPR, you know, bought it out, released it. And so was the end of our program, except for we started this program in 2006 on Block Talk Radio. That program we had started in 2003. We had a great run. We had an 8-year run, you know, as a liberal talk show. And we interviewed a lot of people. And it's interesting that this was the first interview that I did with John McManus. I like John. John's a nice guy. But he's also the president of the John Birch Society. And, you know, my first impression of him was, yeah, he's a bright guy, you know, and stuff. But, you know, I thought about everything that he had said in that interview, and I have that interview, I believe, on my blog talk archives. But, which you can go to. But I wanted to read this article because first impressions are important, because they seem to, they, especially mine, my first impressions of people when I interview them or when I meet them, often stick, and sometimes they seem to be more accurate than later on as I know somebody or meet them again. And I have interviewed John at least half a dozen times on my programs, and I have them all archived in the shows. But I like John is a serious conservative, right? Arch conservative. These guys are John Birch Society, and we got along very well, and I enjoyed talking to him, and he brought a lot of interesting things to light. But this being my first interview, which was December 06, this article is on laschoolshow.org. You can get to that account. I'm reading it actually from that site. And it's called A Reflection of My Interview with John McManus, President of the John Birch Society. I wrote it on December 20th, 2006. My sense of nationalism and patriotism cloud my objectivity when I consider the condition of the present American society. In my research preparing for this interview with Mr. McManus, I discovered the principles of the John Birch Society were founded upon the idealist values of pre-World War II America, as envisioned by its founder, Robert Welch. The 1950s and 60s were a time of unprecedented technology and global awareness that began a new American revolution. A revolution against the old ideals and innocent nationalism of the returning soldiers. In the advent of socialism of the American government, of the American government under the New Deal, the cry of conservatives and constitutionalists established the need for the John Birch Society. By the end of World War II, the acceptance of Social Security and government work programs and services were well established in the minds and hearts of the American people. The first mammoth government program for veterans, the GI Bill, was responsible for educating millions of returning veterans and fostered the remarkable economic growth of America's middle classes in the mid-20th century. This was one of the most far-reaching and successful socialist visions ever implemented in the United States. Well, under the Marshall Plan, the United States became a nation builder. Against all cautions stated by its Constitution and original founders, the rise of global awareness in the 1940s and 50s created popular movements in the United States that radicalized the working and middle classes against war and against oppression. Some of these movements were created by a communist conspiracy designed to undermine the American government, while others, like the John Birch Society, saw its mission as a defender of the American Constitution and the preservation of American ideals as they were traditionally understood. As I can best understand from my research and my interview with Mr. McManus is, what happened to the John Birch Society was an accumulated attack by the extreme liberal elements in our society. This included the media and a vast betrayal of the John Birch Society by conservative allies such as William Buckley Jr., that once supported them, and who National Review magazine was greatly advanced by the John Birch Society. Buckley was then, and probably still is, a CIA operative. This was back in, of course, 2006. And he's recently, he deceased a couple of years ago. All of this was coupled with the U.S. corporate goals of global expansion of their markets and a break from the U.S. from U.S. isolationism. By 1959, in the first printing of the famous Blue Book, globalism and all of its evils have taken root in the U.S. A radical reversal of post-war U.S. foreign and domestic policies would have created worldwide chaos for the globalists and set back their plans to global domination by half a century. The plan made then, that seems apparent now, was to destroy all who upheld the original concepts of the American government, those of self-determination and limited government, involvement in the daily lives of American people. U.S. global ambition seemed to be unbridled by nationalistic principles. Foreign aid needed to expand, needed to be expanded to develop U.S. global influence. The threat of communist expansion, rather it was real or manufactured, became the excuse by the U.S. corporations and globalist members of the government to protect and expand their global interests. The battle of the American conscience and respect for its own constitution and the original ideals of the republic posed a major threat to globalist ambitions. The John Birch Society lost that battle. However, they did not lose the war. Today, more than ever before in American history, the powers of globalism and the U.S. government's ambitions for empire and global domination have allied completely. The global elite have made puppets of our president and a mockery of our representative government. Never has this nation been so infiltrated by its enemies, so controlled by its media and corporations. The world is entering into a period of global oppression and tyranny that would horrify the founders of the American Constitution. If these ambitions of the global elite finally come into full effect, there will be no way of stopping it. The John Birch Society is trying to alert every American to be aware of this immediate crisis to prevent it from happening. By the way, they hated George W. Bush, and they hated George Bush, and they disliked Romney, and they supported Ron Paul. The threat of global fascism is evident throughout our society. Corporations dictate government domestic and foreign policies. Men and women, CEOs of the major industrial and financial institutions, have served and are currently serving in high government positions. Corporate donations to the two major political parties are the mainstay of our congressional and presidential election process. Fraud, corruption, and cronyism is at the highest levels even ever witnessed in our history. The blatant corruption in defense and social welfare programs, financial institution bailouts, and the continuous devaluation of the American currency by the conspiratorial globalist banking system and Federal Reserve amounts to multiple trillions of dollars. Now remember, I wrote this back in 2006. Okay? This was, you know, we didn't have the bailouts till 2008, even though we had already seen the bailouts in 80 of the savings and loans. You know, and the Federal Reserve had been doing this all along. You know, and the John Birch Society was absolutely against the Federal Reserve, and I respected them for that. I still do. These global monetary institutions have enslaved every American and entire American economy through their predatory lending practices and oppressive usury. States have been forced to sell their own infrastructure, such as highways and bridges, to private and foreign investors just to maintain their own state budgets from plunging into massive deficits. I see the John Birch Society and its membership as the last defenders of an ancient ideal of a sovereign nation. Its founder was a great admirer of Ralph Waldo Emerson. I am also a great admirer of Mr. Emerson. And after my interview with John McManus, I was compelled to consider that this chance acquaintance with him meant to me and to my predominantly liberal audience, when one of Emerson's pearls of wisdom came to mind, I will take the liberty of quoting it. It said, "O believe as thou livest that every sound that is spoken over the round world, which thou oughtst to hear, will vibrate on thy ear. Every proverb, every book, every byword that belongs to thee for aid or comfort shall surely come home through open or winding passages." That was from the Oversoul. And actually, that was I quoted that in my book, Make It Up the Mic. That was the opening quote, the opening sentence in my book. Several minutes prior to my interview with John McManus, I read the first few paragraphs of the original blue book as an introduction to my audience. I was would like to quote the third paragraph of this historic book. Naturally, we have faced extensive and malicious attacks from both the open and the disguised left. Nothing more is required today to bring down on any man's head a torrent of smears from a liberal establishment than to deny the beauties of the welfare state. Or to this is the quote. Naturally, we have faced extensive and malicious attacks on both the open and the disguised left. Nothing more is required today to bring down on any man's head a torrent of smears from the liberal establishment than A, to deny the beauties of the welfare state, or B, to seek to preserve the opportunities and responsibilities of the individual, or to suspect the venality of any of the establishment's painstaking manufacturing of clay-footed gods with their synthetic halos. And we have done all three. It amazed me how little has changed in the last 50 years since Robert Welsh wrote these words. The Blue Book opens with an inspirational passage from an unreferenced poet. Whether it was Emerson or Welsh himself, I do not know. But on one man's soul, but it goes this way. But on one man's soul it hath broken, a light that doth not depart. And his look or word he hath spoken brought flame in another man's heart. The flame still burns in the hearts of all John Birch Society members. It is a small but growing flame vented by the hurricane force wind of globalism as a deadly threat to American sovereignty. I wonder if our government and the American people have already forgotten and moved too far away from the original ideals of the Founding Fathers. I wonder if our history has been too revised, too purged of the truth for any honest scholar or researcher to understand the realities of the thoughts and circumstances that influenced the fathers of the American Revolution. I wonder if it was a revolution or is revolution the needed spark to ignite mankind's political and technological evolution. Can what has been done in the name of global human advancement be reversed, clarified, or objectively criticized by modern scholars? Many highly regarded American historians and scholars are responsible for the false revisionism and globalist propaganda now taught as historical facts in our secondary schools and colleges. I am grateful to have had the opportunity to speak with Mr. McManus. A chapter will be added about this interview to my book, Now in Progress. And perhaps it will be one of the pivotal chapters in the book, just as the introduction to the John Birch Society has been a pivotal chapter in the lives of its growing membership. And I'm glad I wrote that article. I was glad I met Mr. McManus and John and I don't know. I'm proud to still. It was interesting that John invited us to the 50th anniversary of the John Birch Society as honored members because, hey, even though we were a liberal talk show, but we were one of the few radio shows in the country that gave them a voice. And we had them on and treated them with respect and listened to them. And they brought forward the whole premise of the North American Union, which at that time, back in 2006, was the major thing of merging Canada, the United States, and Mexico together. And it was frightening. We don't hear anything about it today. But it was quite the fright then, and we think the John Birch Society for notifying me on that, and I did what I could to talk about it and raise consciousness of it happening, and it finally got debunked. It got thrown out, and we're glad that it did. I had just another my introduction, if you will, to conservatism. And I realized that what a fraud it was. After talking to the Birch Society, and understanding their ideals and what their conservative ideals were about the preservation of the Constitution and so on, I realized what a fraud the whole Bush administration was, and all the other. Not that I didn't know already, and I condemned them continually, but I never realized how far off the mark these people really were to conservative values, and how far off the mark they still are. This is kind of an interesting article because it happened with an invitation that I received by CPAC, which is the Conservative Political Action Conference. It's an annual convention of grassroots conservative activists. And, they have every year they have a big convention, you know. And this particular year, in 2005, they sent invitations to all liberal talk show hosts, radio hosts. I happen to be one. And I guess we were considered quite prominent, especially in our market area. We were very popular. But for some reason, we got the attention of CPAC, and we're invited to the CPAC conference to be able to interview and debate, talk with conservative members of Congress and pundits and so on and so forth, and interview them for our shows. But it was really funny because it just threw me, really. And I wrote about it. I wrote this article and published it on my site on January 27th, 2005, is when I wrote this. And it was CPAC. Is the Conservative Political Action, it's called An Invitation to Hell, by the way. That's the name of it. CPAC is a Conservative Political Action Conference, an annual convention of grassroots conservative activists and broadcasters held in February at the Ronald Reagan Building in D.C. To my great surprise, I received an invitation to attend the conference and interview some or many of the conservative pundits and political celebrities who will be gathered there. At first, I thought the letter was a joke by one of my listeners until I decided to call the media coordinator to confirm my invitation and ask if they were aware that I was a liberal talk show host. She laughed and said, "Yes, we knew you were a liberal show, but we decided to invite liberal talk show hosts to this convention to raise the level of interest. In fact, Al Franken is going to debate G. Gordon Liddy." I realized at that moment that either I was being sucked into a dare, or that CPAC was openly offering liberals a forum, or at least a microphone, to hear what we might have to say. Right. I was still a little stunned to find out that my invitation wasn't a mistake, and that I was being given the chance to interview and listen to some of the top pundits and conservative thinkers in the country. Wow, I thought. What an opportunity. What a great opportunity for a small radio station, liberal talk show host, to go toe-to-toe with some of the biggest blunderheads in the world. I spoke to a few friends and my station manager, and all said it was a great opportunity, a chance to get some real meaningful discussions with the right and far right. I thought this was a good idea until I looked up the agenda, the conference agenda. Novak debates Donaldson. Speakers, Ann Coulter, Mitch McConnell, et cetera, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. The list just got worse and worse. Then we celebrate with the young Americans in the grand Ronald Reagan banquet. I was certain I could never survive a minute of that hell without one of Dante's divine guides. Then I thought, what the hell was I thinking? Was I for 1 minute thinking that I could possibly get an interview with any one of these conservative bones of merit? Me, Mr. Liberal. This is all a grand setup to probably screw me and any other poor sucker liberal talk show host into the woodwork. Not only was the list of attendees less than stellar, last year they had Dick Cheney. It appeared that the list of conservative pundits and politicos attending this year was dramatically downgraded to C-list celebrities and politicians. This is probably why they invited the liberal media. I realized that my going to this conference would only result in my descent into a liberal's hell. 3 days of droning Christian conservatives praying for G.W. Bush and the rise of theocratic government in the U.S. would warp my mind into ideas of becoming a suicide bomber. I foresaw my discomfort level rising to levels of unbearable pain and agony, tantamount to greater torture than that inflicted on prisoners at Abu Ghraib. What a nightmare. I thought of trying to phrase a non-insulting question or trying desperately not to blurt out in anger or scream of why or how, knowing that the answer I received, if any, would make less sense than my own question as I descended deeper into conservative madness, deeper into hell, nearing the fiery furnace of the comprehension of Christian right-wing conservative young American neo-Bushism, neocon Bushism. Ha ha ha! There is much to be said about preaching to the choir, staying within your realm of understanding and not tempt madness. Liberalism is not madness, nor is it a disease, as so many crackpot Christian neocon nutters like declare it to be. Liberalism is the reasonable and ultimate method for the ascension of mankind from the hell of ignorance and the damnation of human extinction. Liberalism is the belief in the best of man. Conservatism is the belief in the worst of man. These are the direct meanings from Webster's Dictionary. Do not let anyone sway you from the truth. Mingling with fools can only be tolerated by fools. And then I have to think about Obama's debate last night. And I can't help but thinking, you know, Obama was looking at this guy as a complete and utter idiot, a fool, a moron, you know, humping his leg. You know, basically an out-of-control rabid dog, you know, attacking his plans and his strategies that have allowed this country to stay afloat for the last, 4 years. And now you got this moron, you know, saying, oh, no, I'm going to cut all the taxes, I'm going to cut everybody's Medicare, I'm going to cut everybody's everything, and I'm going to take this world country back and blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, personally, I think Romney's a flagrant idiot. And I think everybody in that party is a flagrant idiot. Okay? And if they aren't, then they're heartless and ruthless. All right? And that's how I feel. I can't get over that. I mean, they may be nice people personally, but philosophically, they're demons. They're demonic. They would destroy this country. They would absolutely destroy, and they almost did. All right. So, I'm not saying that, you know, there are issues that we're dealing with here, and maybe Obama is definitely not a saint or any kind of. Now he's a pragmatist, he's a realist, and he's trying to get things done, but, you know, hey, what can I say? Back in January 2005 happened to be really more or less the first year of my website, and I wrote a lot back then. But We were undergoing the second year of George W. Bush, the second term. My first term was bad enough, but the second term, you know, was just unbearable. And, so many people, liberals, liberal Americans, were leaving the country. They were leaving this country by droves. In fact, I think that year, the year of George W. Bush re-election, what was his name? He was this press secretary for John F. Kennedy. Wrote the memoir, wrote a book on Jacqueline Kennedy. Pierre, something or other. I wish I remembered. I don't know if he's still alive or not. But he moved to Paris. He moved to France because he expatriated. He said he couldn't take it. He couldn't take this country anymore. It was beyond him. How they could possibly allow the voter fraud and allow this idiot, this moron, George W. Bush, to be president. And I laughed. But so many others moved to Canada, moved to different parts of the country. And I wrote this about that kind of. It's called An American Exile. It begins with a quote from the Statue of Liberty. "While not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep ancient lands your story's pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore, send these homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." And that's quoted on the Statue of Liberty, and it's a poet, Emil Lazarus, who died in 1887. The poem was dated in 1887, called The New Colossus, a poem inscribed on the Statue of Liberty. There is growing movement of self-exiles in the United States. I know because I am one and have spoken to many other liberals and moderate conservatives who consider themselves cast adrift and disconnected from the new ideals and values of this country. False ideals have replaced pride of achievement of this nation and individual liberty and freedom. Grand ideals of a country has stood noble before the world because of our stable government and the diversity and industry of our population. In shame of error, ignorance, and arrogance, the United States eventually accepted its wrongs and strove to lead the world in the achievement of the ideals of freedom and liberty through the slow, steady method of debate and committed resolve. But now our leaders are leading us and the world into the acceptance of hypocrisy, militarism, and economic and moral bankruptcy." And this is what happened. And this was under a conservative leadership. This was under a conservative government. This stuff started happening then, all right? We saw it. We talked about it. We spoke about it. I preached it all day and night on my website and on my radio shows and on my television show, because I had a TV show at that point. I did until 2007 or 2008. And we did everything that we could to try to stand up to this conservative nightmare that's taken over our country. And finally, 2008, not only did we get a liberal as a president, we got a black liberal. which was even far greater as a symbol and a breakthrough of our hard work. And then, unfortunately, our hopes and our dreams, then unfortunately, Obama disappointed us terribly because he wouldn't, and didn't prosecute the conservatives. He didn't prosecute the banksters. He didn't prosecute anybody, right? And he kind of morphed into a Bush, where he expanded the military, expanded the wars, and it became such an embarrassment, such a disappointment to us, and it still is. I don't think there's any liberal out there that really likes Obama. But what they are is they fear to death Romney, which I do, and the Republicans. And, we have to accept that. The only, if there's any sighting of the excitement, and I say this now because this is real, the excitement around Romney is motivated strictly, and I say this, strictly from the Jewish media. Alright. Romney is tight with the Jews. He has, always has been, always will be. Mormons are a satellite of the Jewish faith. Okay? They're Zionists. And you can't get away from that. So, you have to understand. Obama does not want us to go to war with Iran. This bothered me that he didn't mention this last night in the debate. Romney wants to go to war with Iran. Romney wants to be an aggressive partner with Israel. Okay? Romney is a nightmare. He is a nightmare. Alright? But yet, Obama just let it all slide. He didn't say it. He didn't bring it up to the people. This is the American president. If anybody knows what's going on, it's this guy. Okay? I don't know. I don't know what's happening out there. All I know is that we're in big trouble in this country. And whether or not Obama's kind of given up the reins, or the reins have been taken away from him, or he's going to wake up and fight for those reins, I don't know. But if somebody doesn't hold on, somebody doesn't hold on to those, to those horses that are right now running out of control and ready to go over the cliff, then we're going to have a real problem. And, it's not conservative policies that are going to help us. Far-thinking, far-reaching possibilities. And it's not, giving money to energy companies or, giving money to or oil expansion or, or cap tests or whatever the hell else they want to throw money at. It's not that. What it is allowing, getting people back to work, getting people, getting jobs, starting industry, work projects, everything that you can do to get people back to work, give them something to be proud of and a paycheck so they can afford their homes and afford to care for their families. Right now, the absolute amazing thing that I've read is that there are more people in the United States committing suicide than there are who are dying in car crashes or traffic crashes. But that's horrendous. Okay? So, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you folks. It's just, conservative policies have failed. They have failed, and they will continue to fail. There is no way around it. I wrote this a book of course, which was 3 days ago. I don't know if I covered ground on this one, but I don't know how well it is, it is or will be. But it's something that I wrote that I felt was important. And it's called Decision of an American Voter. And it has a lot to do with my philosophy, but it also has to do with practicality. And I work with the flow we're faced with right now. The 2012 election was one of the most anticipated elections I've experienced in several decades. The desperation America and the world is facing is directly due to the failed policies of past Republican administrations, and due in part to many of the failed policies of the current Democratic administration. I believe most Americans are in a state of flux and fear as we consider as our leader the two candidates being offered by the Republicans and Democratic parties. Third parties have been completely silenced in American elections because of media bias and lack of corporate donations. The last great hope for many right-leaning independents was Ron Paul, but he was a dyed-in-the-wool Republican and would never denounce his true loyalty to the system or party, and suddenly, unapologetically, he stranded his millions of faithful supporters and dropped out of the 2012 Republican primaries and was never heard from again after his son Rand Paul betrayed him and gave his support to Mitt Romney. I have known and supported several third-party candidates who were considered fringe candidates. I supported Ralph Nader in 2000, Ross Perot in 1992, and in 1996, when Ross Perot attempted to run again, most Americans, including his former supporters, realized he was insane. In 2004, I was a Dean supporter, until he proved to be a Democratic shill and the media destroyed his campaign by making him look insane. Remember the Yahoo screen in New Hampshire? Or New Hampshire, I think it was Iowa. He came in third. And he obviously had enough intelligence to become the DNC chairman. His entire campaign was a scam to bring the anti-war liberals into the Democratic forum. Then the Democrats made Kerry the nominee. This was devastating, since anyone with any pride and respect for his country could not stomach John Kerry. After the Republican swift vote attack campaign, Kerry was seen as a national coward instead of a hero. Despite the pathetic John Kerry as the Democratic candidate in 2004, Kerry still won the popular vote, and due to outrageous election fraud conducted by the Republicans and the introduction of electronic voting machines and corrupt secretaries of state in the key states of Florida and Ohio, G.W. Bush won that election, and Kerry proved his cowardice to his supporters by not contesting the blatant fraud an unexplainable loss of 3 million Democratic voter ballots in those states. Those of us who are not suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's remember the nightmare election of 2000 when the U.S. Supreme Court unconstitutionally decided to the outcome of that election, and America got G.W. Bush, 9/11, Afghanistan, and the Iraq wars. And the government and corporate theft of the U.S. Treasury. It is amazing how Americans so quickly forget or simply deny their own history. Now in 2000, it's almost done, the show's almost done, but I'm going to continue this article, and you can read the rest of it on my website, LASteelShow.org. Now in 2012, the American voter is faced with the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. Once again, they are considering a hard-right Republican candidate who insists cutting all welfare and social safety nets for the American people. Great programs such as Medicare and Social Security, Medicaid and the school lunch programs, public work programs and work training programs, student loans and grants are on the Republican cutting block. These devastating assaults to our social fabric are what the Republicans want. It is what they stand for. Their only proposals and programs presented to the American people in this election will result in the annihilation of the greatest and most compassionate social programs in U.S. history. Any American who would vote to end these programs is not only a ruthless traitor to his countrymen, but also a complete idiot. What kind of monster would deny their children, parents, and grandparents food, medical care, and a subsistence income for clothing and shelter? These programs are not entitlements. They are paid for by all who paid into these programs their entire working lives. Medicare and Social Security are solvent for the foreseen future. The theft of these funds by the federal government is the problem. The irresponsible policies of both Democrats and Republicans in Congress and the White House are the great threat to these programs. The endless war and corporate subsidies and corruption have caused all of America's problems. Cold-hearted and blatant contempt toward the American people and the corruption of our legislative and executive officials and blatant stupidity of all who elected them have caused this current economic crisis and all the social problems facing America today. Unless the American voter wakes up now, it may well be the end of all that was ever good in our society. In the end of the United States. As a baby boomer, I can look back at the mistakes I've made in my life with some regrets. But of all the regrets that I have, none equal the frightening realization of what has happened and is happening in my country. The virtues and standards that I believed in as a child and young man are virtually non-existent in America today. Recently released government reports have alarmingly stated that more Americans today die of suicide than automobile accidents. More children live in poverty in America today than any other time in American history. There are more Americans going hungry today than in the Great Depression. The vast 47% that Mitt Romney says he doesn't care about are these people that are deprived of the American dream and even the opportunity to make a livable wage. How can anyone look at a Republican policies of the past and present and consider voting for any member of the political party that has and will literally destroy them? The evidence is clear. The crimes of past and present Republican-controlled Congresses and administrations have disseminated the American economy and destroyed our national credit rating and the hopes for America's future. How can anyone be so ignorant not to see what has happened and is happening in front of their own eyes? How can any American, regardless of his or her financial status or educational background, deny what is happening and insist on voting for any member of the Republican Party? The same political party that has caused the vast majority of all America's problems now promises in their campaigns that they will create the worst economic and social collapse in the history of civilization. The choice for the American voter is very clear in the 2012 presidential and congressional elections. However, the mass media manipulations are masking the issues, the real corruption, the real corporate and government contempt for the American people. $1 billion will be spent by the presidential candidates in 2012 election. Most of the money will be paid to the major media outlets. The news networks will say whatever their sponsors tell them to say, while pretending to present balanced news coverage and independent journalism. The hypocrisy of the American news media is so obvious and outrageous, no reasonably intelligent person can take them seriously. Americans must use their own common sense, intuition and sensibility in the 2012 election. Unfortunately, I fear that the majority of Americans are mindless and will prove it if they elect any member of the Republican Party. I understand the concerns of intelligent Americans will vote in the upcoming elections, but may pause before voting for a Democrat. However, the issues are what they are, and the Democratic Party is the party that created and fought for all of the greatest social programs we have today. We have to believe that they will continue their firm commitment to preserve and protect the rights and dignity of American people, and recommit to rebuilding and reestablishing America and the trust of those who elected them. I am still and always will remain the independent and independent. But in 2012, I have been put in the position of no choice. I can opt out of this election and let fate take its course, or I can vote for someone who hopefully will protect and fight for a better future, where I may have the chance to someday see an independent candidate win the presidency and create a viable third party. Until then, I must look realistically at the choices in this election and decide if I still want to be a part of this democratic system. If I decide to remain an American and not expatriate to some foreign country, then I must remain to fight and rebuild with the tools and weapons I have. The only tools I have are my vote and my voice. The only weapons I have are my hope and commitment for a brighter and better future for my country. I don't believe the end of America is here. I believe the beginning could be very near and could begin in November 2012. However, I do believe America will end soon if the Republican Party remains in power and are not completely defeated. And I want to thank everybody who listened to me tonight. Those are my thoughts on conservatism, my thoughts on last night's debate, my thoughts on Mr. Obama. And, you know, for what it's worth, I hope you at least walk away with the understanding of how I interpret this election. And it's the best I can do. You can read all of these articles on my website, laschoolshow.org. And there's a little search thing on the top there if you looking for those specific articles that I've read. You can just put them right in the search thing and they'll come right up. I have over 600 articles in there, so it's quite extensive. Several of those, three or four of those articles I wrote in 2005 and others in 2012. But if you go to my site, you'll notice that I have everything categorized by month on the right-hand side of the site. By month, date, month and year. You can go in there and look at all the stuff that's been published in that period. A lot of information, a lot of our synthesis. And my book, I have 167 essays actually in my book, Make It Up Tonight, if you're interested in seeing that. You can get order a copy from my website, just go to Amazon.com there. I go to the site, you'll see the book, and just click on the book and go to Amazon and read a few chapters there and tell you about the book. So, I want to thank everybody. Program. You're not a crazy conservative. You're somebody who's a thinker.